Cup. Here we go.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston.
The very best day is
ESPN 97.5.
Except no substitutes.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, hour number two begins now. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel in the studio, hopefully getting you through, or at least assisting, a Tuesday in the big city. The storm is upon us. Not yet, but it's on its way. These spaghetti models, based on the European model and the United States models, have a whole lot of pasta heading your way, whether it be south or depending on, if I understand this correctly, when the eye of the storm heads out into the Gulf, depending on how far it goes out before it starts turning up to the west, will determine whether it, if it gets out further, then there's a chance it's going to hit Houston. If it gets out not as far, I believe it's then going to slide south of Houston. But we should probably have an expert
for us. Yeah. We'll have an expert on at 3:15 to tell us all about that. Stephen Musick, who writes for sportsmap.com. He's our resident weather guru for our station and sportsmap.com.
Is it 3:15?
And a loyal
joining
suspect.
Us at 3:15. Yes, sir.
He does listen to us pretty much daily.
Yes, he does indeed.
We'll ask him if Barry can stand in front of the hurricane and divert it. You know, we
take whatever one for the team.
Yeah. It's your hurricane, bro.
Yeah. Barry on Barry crime.
So you would wish
it's on you.
You want me to divert a hurricane?
Well, I mean, the way you defined it for
I'm
all of us,
fat.
As long as your water gets, I mean, your lawn gets watered.
I mean, I'm good with that.
Yeah. So in the process, if it takes you out, as long as the lawn got watered, it's good, right?
We're getting into the high bill season, so I'm any prolonged rain, I'm good with.
So there you have it, Nick. As long as it waters the Laminack lawn before it takes Barry head to head.
Hey, bad news, fellas.
Uh-oh.
Bad news.
What is this now?
Ross Perot died.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they announced it this morning.
I literally just saw it on my Twitter feed.
89 years old.
89, yep.
Yep.
Born in Texarkana, Texas in 1930.
He was a fast talker.
$4.1 billion was his net worth as of October 2017.
It's pretty good.
That's not bad at all. He was an independent before 1995, a Republican from 2000 to 2019. He was part of the Reform Party from 95 to 2000. Some of you will recall he ran for president, and I believe that was the first year I could vote.
Clinton,
he could fund his. I believe he funded his whole campaign.
Yeah, that was he was Trump before Trump. And what I mean by that is, everybody settle down. What I mean by that is he was the anti-politician.
Right.
Who, like you said, could fund his own campaign if he so chose to. He wasn't dependent upon the business of politics to make money.
Trump
like some
politicians. I think Trump referenced it in the last month where he said he was going to take full credit for being the first guy. And then he went, well, actually, Ross Perot and then him.
Yeah. But that 92 campaign was the first year that I could vote. And so that was the first person I ever voted for was Ross Perot.
Okay.
So wasted that vote.
Wow.
Completely wasted. He was just quirky. He was weird.
Well, and I said he's a fast talker.
Yeah.
And then they showed the one where he was on Meet the Press and they asked him a question and he tried to answer it and the guy kept interrupting and he finally got ticked off about it. He goes, I mean, you can let me finish or what? Because, I mean, you can ask a question, then I'm going to give you an answer. If I'm going to give you an answer, then I'm going to give you an answer. But you can let me finish. The guy said, well, I'm trying to. He goes, no. You finished your question. Now let me answer it. Otherwise, I'm not going to produce anymore. It's like, wow. He just gets a lot of words out.
He's got like four daughters.
They're going to be.
But they're all married.
That's a bill each.
Yeah, you're right.
He is
16 grandchildren. 16 grandchildren.
What? Yeah. I didn't know this on Wikipedia. In 1984, Perot bought a very early copy of Magna Carta, one of only a few to leave the United Kingdom. The document sold for 21.3 million in December to David Rubenstein.
Oh, he sold it?
Yeah. That's pretty wild, though. A lot of money.
Would you pay $21 million for a document like that?
If you had the money,
if I had
you mean?
$4 billion, yeah, I would pay $21 million for something that valuable and then be able to sell it later. Absolutely. I remember seeing him, you know, obviously during the presidential campaign. But what I enjoyed was like the parody that they would do. I think it was Dana Carvey that would do Ross
Perot. Yeah.
And yep. He would just always be like, I got a chart right here. See, I got this chart. American people like charts. I just remember him doing that over and over. I was like, this is good stuff. This is...
Boy, back in the day with their cast.
Man.
They had a lot of talent to do impersonations and everything like that. And look, credit to them now because they're also realizing it may not be their strongest suit. So then they're going to get De Niro to do guest appearances every week. And they're getting Baldwin to do Trump.
But, yep.
Yeah, back in the day... With some of the guys they had that could do impersonations, wow, they were good. Because Dana did Bush Sr. too.
Yeah, he did.
Really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So we got condolences to the Perot family.
Yeah, that sucks. I didn't realize that. But he lived a good life. He lived to be almost 90 and you're a billionaire. Your life didn't suck.
And he's been a billionaire for a while.
Yeah. Well, according to the Wikipedia page, he sold his company Perot Systems to Dell for $3.1 million.
Producer Dell?
$3.1 billion.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
You know who else I saw died recently was Lee Iacocca.
Oh, really?
And he was the guy that used to do all the Dodge Chrysler commercials. Yeah. And then he was going to run for president, but he didn't. Then he was working for Ford, and Ford pissed him off. So that's when he went to Chrysler. But he was a big another guy that.
He was credited for saving that company, Chrysler.
Yep.
He basically saved Chrysler from going out of business.
Yeah, and he was another guy kind of on your line of thinking with Perot, where he was just a businessman, again, that they wanted him to run for president, and he refused, but people thought he would have had a good chance.
Probably true.
He hit 89 as well, I believe. So no, he might have even been 93. So I saw that on...
When did he pass?
This last week, a week ago. Because Willie Geist, you know how they do that? A good life, well lived, or whatever. At the end of the Sunday Willie Geist show, Sunday Today show, they honored his life.
So, oh, okay. Yeah.
I just remember he did the before the Corinthian leather. It was Lee Iacocca talking about Chrysler.
Yeah,
yeah.
Somebody said, "Damn, I'm high right now," and me and the homies are talking about babies in the wound. My favorite part is that it's babies in the wound. WOUND.
You hope that was voice to text, but you know it wasn't.
I hope it was voice to text. But he's also high, so.
Right.
Or her.
She's high.
Yeah. So that's all right. We'll forgive you on that. I made a point. We had to get to this at some point today, but we didn't talk any at all yesterday about the U.S. women's national team.
We didn't.
We did not get to it.
Right.
And Nora immediately jumped my ass because I was like, you know, she's like, how was the show? I was like, oh, man, another good show. We had fun, you know, with good times, and everything's clicking. We seem to be hitting on all cylinders. She's like, that's good. Did y'all talk about the U.S. women's national team winning? I was like, no, we didn't get to it. We spent a lot of time on the Astros and, you know, Mariznick and
Rockets
and trade scenarios and Kawhi. And we talked about something else yesterday, too.
A lot going on.
UFC.
But also.
And she got mad. She was like, what? That's one of the biggest stories. I was like, okay, settle down,
lady. I did think about that. I did think about it after I tweeted out the Twitter poll, and I had three topics, and I was like, you know what? I should have included that as a fourth, but yep. I didn't. But
well, I mean, props to the ladies, and I'll say is that I hope this now leads to equal pay, because I think that they've proven, I don't know what else they can do or have to do, to prove that what they do is as relevant, as important, and as successful, if not more, well, definitely more so, than the men's team.
Now, Fred and AJ made a good point driving home last night. Fred was very adamant against it because Fred said, when you look at what the World Cup brought in revenue-wise, the men's versus the women, the men was something like $4 billion, and the women was in the...
That's where I'm at. I've had that same argument consistently for years. They can't pay you with paychecks that they don't have. They can't. If you don't generate revenue, it doesn't matter if you succeed more from a sports standpoint. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. And I felt that way from day one. Like, Now, if is there some inequality happening? I bet you there is. That's outside of finances for sure, but it might be a similar dynamic from a monetary standpoint. There's some inequality there, but for the most part, despite the men losing, you can make the argument that they're generating more money. And that would be my only thing. Like, if I had the numbers in front of me, if the numbers were relatively close between men and women, I'd be happy to cut a bigger check. But if there's a big discrepancy between the money generated by men and women, then why would I pay you more?
When you look at viewership, broadcast revenues, and all the different things, they were saying one is the international governing body is going to decide what the bonuses are, and then it comes down to, do you want to bring your issue to the United States Soccer Federation to make sure that, you know, because a lot of things that surprised me and hearing Fred and AJ talk about it on the way home last night was about, like, one or the other is a throw-in. Like, if you have a company and you want to sponsor the women, they offer deals where they'll throw the men in as well and you could win this. I mean, you get both for this package. Or if you want to sponsor the men, they'll throw the women in. That's completely wrong, and those people should have their head examined, because obviously the men aren't even going to participate in this year, the next World Cup, but yet the women have won back-to-back.
Can I tell you now why Fred and Nick are wrong?
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, okay, so here's what you have to realize is that the World Cup ratings this year for the women's surpassed the men's finals last year. So it goes back to, as well, the revenue generated. If the women are outdrawing the men in ratings, then the revenue based on sponsorships should be up. But what you have is it's systemic where, well, we're not going to spend that much on women's soccer. Oh, we'll spend all that money on men's soccer. I don't know if we want to spend that much on women's. It's just not as popular. But the ratings prove that to be otherwise. So then it trickles down to where, well, if the revenue generated from ratings and advertising and everything else isn't as much, then we're not going to pay them as much. So I think that some of it becomes, like I said, it's a little bit systemic in that if the ratings are up there and they're outdrawing the men, then they should certainly be, the revenue generated should be higher.
That's why Barry was quiet for 5 minutes. He was doing his research while you and I were talking.
Right. His pie graph is coming.
Yeah. But the reality is also, I would look at, just to play devil's advocate, how many times have they had ratings like that? Because a lot of times when you sell ratings, good ratings, it's because there's a precedent there. You have good ratings again and again and again. So you use that as a sales tactic to advertisers. So look, at the end of the day, look, if those ratings really did translate to more money, I'm all for it. I'm not hating. But in most cases, people who make business decisions, whether they're owners or CEOs of companies or not, are not going to cut you a bigger check just because you want a bigger check. You have to generate it. You have to bring it back. So,
you know, and I think, look, Megan Rapinoe is the most outspoken of all the U.S. players about equal pay and equal marketability and attention and everything like that. But when you look at it, too, the other thing that you have to consider, and Matt Jackson, I want to give him credit for this. He's filled in on this show before, but used to be in the market. Now he's a teacher. But he tweeted out, and it's a very valid point as well. If the women are really trying to gain notoriety as a sport to equal the men, too, now that the women, I don't know if you know this or not, but now that the U.S. women have won it, they are going to go on a month-long tour. So they are going to do a ticker tape parade in New York. Then they're going to go to L.A. Then they're going to play exhibitions. Whereas they're going to be leaving their women's MLS teams without them for the next month, month and a half. So, for instance, Megan Rapinoe, who plays for Seattle, was due to be in Houston the first week in August. She's not going to be here now, because she's going to be on this world tour in a couple of major cities with the rest of the Team USA playing an exhibition. If you really want to grow the sport and the attention and each individual player's persona from a marketability standpoint, then you have them go back to their teams as soon as possible, so that in a lot of cities that don't have access to a New York or an LA or Chicago, you can see Megan Rapinoe right down the street here in Houston and get a chance to be that close to an Olympian to a World Cup champion that's done all the things, and an Olympian and things she's done, and really grow the sport, as opposed to this world tour where we kind of live with blinders on in just the four or five major markets, and that's it.
Can I hit you with this? Well, we got to go to break.
Go ahead, get it up.
It just says, this is from an article on Yahoo Finance. According to financial reports from the U.S. Soccer Federation reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. women's national team games generated more total revenue than the U.S. men's national team games from 2016 through 2018. $50.8 million in revenue versus $49.9 million for the men. So the women in the last 3 years have earned more in revenue than the men, but they're still not getting it.
And I said this earlier this week or last week on the show too. I said, look, the bottom line is if you win at the rate they're winning and you continue to put up the results they're putting up as opposed to the United States men, you should reward them with more money because they've earned it. They make your entire country look great on an international scale. So,
speaking of rewards, you want to reward yourself when you book travel?
Oh, look what you did there.
Huh? What? Who's professional radio guy? Check out besthotelrates.com. They are going to save you money when you book your hotels through besthotelrates.com. And look, we're all going to travel at some point. You know, you may only vacation once a year, twice a year, 10 times a year. Doesn't matter. Don't waste your money. Check out besthotelrates.com. They've negotiated special rates with like 600,000 different hotels around the world. And then what they do is they just extend those discounts to you. All you got to do is just go to besthotelrates.com. You put in your destination, your date to travel. Voila. You are looking at discounted rates from most of the hotels you're probably going to stay at anyways, or at least would be considering. So check it out. Save your money. Book through besthotelrates.com. You're going to get great customer service. They're going to back up your reservations. It's safe. It's secure. All you have to do is travel and have a good time. So check it out, besthotelrates.com. Start planning your next trip today. It's in the name, besthotelrates.com.
So, you want to go out tonight but don't know where to go? Easy fix. Head over to culturemap.com for the latest social happenings going on in the city. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, a lot of spirited discussion going offline, online, so to speak, as a lot of people on text and Twitter are chiming in on their thoughts on this entire dialogue with the men's and women's national teams in soccer.
It's good to have a healthy dialogue, and of course, people are going to agree and disagree and make their own points. Somebody said, Barry, this is the only time you hear about women's soccer. You won't hear about it until three more years from now. Men's World Cup brings billions every 4 years, but still popular every day. Okay, that doesn't have anything to do with the U.S. women's national team.
I think the numbers you brought up were important. Like, that's why I said when we were talking, and we were talking about this in the commercial break, if I had the numbers in front of me and it said that they were generating about the same revenue, men and women, then I would like to think that I was an honest enough guy to write an equal check. You know, like if you're the best female star and this is what the best male star is getting, you should get equal value or more because you're generating about the same revenue. So
somebody said, well, the USA women's team plays more games than the men because they win.
Right.
Because they win. You're going to punish them now and say, oh, well, sorry you guys are out there winning. The men's team sucks ass. That's why they're not playing as much.
And that was my point.
That's a dumbass argument. Don't bring that one. No. We want to talk about the systemic part.
Somebody was trying to defend the men's team going, well, they haven't qualified because the new qualifier for the World Cup is down the road. The last World Cup was last year, and they weren't in it because they sucked. So the bottom line is, as a country, we lose sight of the fact that just like the Olympics, you want to be the best country out there. You want the representation for your country to be outstanding. The women are living up to their end of the deal. Mm-hmm. And so reward them.
Yeah, so like if it's just been the past 3 years and this continues to be on the up and up, and then year four, year five comes and they're generating more or same value, then there should be, you know, this is a new precedent. Now you can go up to advertisers and say, hey, look, at the past 5 years, they're killing ratings because they're actually just as popular, if not more popular than the men's team because they're doing well. This is an increased price point at which you got to pay for advertising because we need to pay these people.
And my point is because everybody saw the FIFA numbers that came out where the women's team for winning it, each member gets about $225,000. For the men's team, if the men win it, it's $1.1 million. Okay, so everybody's pointing the finger at the wrong spot. Like, you know, from a FIFA perspective, they're all about the international ratings, money, revenue, and regardless of which team wins it, that's the prize that's going to be given out. But when you're talking about from a United States perspective, stop rewarding the guys' team if they're not doing anything to earn it and make themselves worthy of it, and reward the women's team who are not only putting you on the map, but they're writing history in the name of the United States with every match they play.
Somebody said, by Barry's logic, insert WNBA player's name here should be making as much money as LeBron James.
Nope.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Not what I'm saying at all. That was a nice try. But you obviously didn't listen or pay attention to what I said. Somebody said, woke Barry is my least favorite Barry. It's not about being woke. It's just about recognizing inequalities and pointing them out. I mean, it's fine if you don't agree. That's okay. You're certainly
welcome
to that.
That's why we're here doing what we do. Because people are going to disagree, and we're going to have dialogue. As long as you don't call them a dumbass, then we'll continue to have dialogue.
That's true.
When you start doing that, we'll move on.
That's true. Is that Byron?
Looks like Byron, unless
they
intern
spelled Brian wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wants to talk women's soccer.
Is it Brian or Byron?
That was the one. It's Brian. But, you know, I've been called worse, so I'll take what I can.
What's up, Brian?
I just wanted to talk a little bit about it. Joel started to touch on it. It's actually a two-pronged deal when it comes to the pay gap. There's the FIFA side and then the U.S. soccer side. Like, the total prize pool for the Women's World Cup is $30 million, and FIFA already said that they're going to double it to $60. But they're also going to up the men's prize pool from $400 to $440. So just from a sheer dollars, it's going to get bigger. An article I read, they have two-something billion dollars just sitting in a bank. So they have the money. But to Nick's point, sort of they have the money. Where's that paycheck going to come from? And that's where sponsorships need to step up. But the U.S. Soccer Federation part of it, that's where they have the lawsuit going on. Just until a couple of years ago, when the women's team would have friendlies, they would fly their European-based players back and coach. You know that they're not doing that for the Landon Donovans and Christian Pulisics of the world.
No
so, I mean,
way.
That's just absurd. I think they've got a better chance of getting the pay equality, quote-unquote, when it comes to the U.S. soccer side. But FIFA's greedy and corrupt, and they're going to be sitting on that money, and it's going to have to come from somewhere else. So that's my two cents. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Appreciate the call, Brian. Yeah, I think part of the, like you said, you got to, I'm talking about strictly paying the women's team, the women's national team from, I mean, you can only control what you can control. FIFA's a little different than trying to, you know, specifically control what these ladies make from a U.S. perspective.
And I know you got to get to your sponsorship,
yeah.
But is it fair to say that perhaps they're delaying the money because they haven't got the money? Similar to what Brian was saying, for example, and I'll give you the example, and Joel, you can relate to this. If an NBA player signed a multi-year contract right before the NBA signed the TV deal, he was kind of screwed, right? Because all these other players got the advantage of an inflated budget, and now they have to wait till their contract expires before they can, you know, take advantage of it. It might be a similar situation with soccer, in that they're getting this inflated budget now because of increased advertising dollars and increased viewership. There's a delay factor, and I'm making an excuse for them because I believe there's some shadiness in FIFA too.
There's a lot.
But I'm just saying there could be a delay factor there.
And Barry, you can go. To use the NBA analogy, the biggest thing is what's the status when the new TV deal is cut of the collective bargaining agreement and the salary cap? Because those two things are in place for that very reason, so that there's an even playing field regardless of when the new broadcast deals are. And so, like, if you're in the middle of a collective bargaining agreement contract when a new television deal is, the first thing that they're going to put on the table when they open negotiations for a new agreement between the players and the teams is going to be, you need to up the salary cap and include the dollars you got from the new TV deal. So, and the salary cap also kind of so that you can keep salaries in line regardless of whether business is good or bad.
All this talk about money gets me thinking about Get Upside. That's the play. If you like money, hey, you may not be a soccer star, but I have a way that you can put money in your pocket every time you fill up your car or put food in your belly. It's called Get Upside. Download it right now. Put it on your phone. It is completely free. No catch, no gimmicks, no tricks. You just put it on your phone and you use it. And when you use it, you get cash back. Now, your mileage may vary on what you're going to get back, but I'm telling you, I've seen screenshots from listeners They've told me that, hey, man, this month I made $20. Last month I made $17. I got $4 back on one fill-up and then went to Burger King and got $4 more back. That's an actual screenshot that I saw from one of the listeners that's using GetUpside. And I want you to take advantage of that as well. So put it on your phone. It's all one word, GetUpside. Make sure you put in my promo code Barry, B-A-R-R-Y. That'll get you extra bump on your first fill-up when you get that cash back. So I want you to get that bonus. My wife ended up getting like 30 cents a gallon on her first fill-up. Jake Asman's using it, told me he got like $4 back. I think it was $4 on his first fill-up, or seven. I don't remember which one it was, but he got quite a bit back as well. So make sure you're using that promo code Barry when you do it. And don't forget, it's not just the gas, it's the food too. You can get up to 35% cash back. Hundreds of restaurants around the city, Wendy's, Popeyes, Burger King, places you're probably already eating. Why not just get some cash back while you do it? Don't leave money on the table. Don't leave money at the pump. Download GetUpside right now. Put it on your phone. Put in my promo code Barry. Start getting that cash back. Thank me later.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 90 in the books, 90 still to go. It's the second half of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. We like to call it the big show because it is, and you guys help make it that way. We love you, the suspects, as we continue to do research during the break.
Yeah, Holly sent us something, and we're going to get off this subject, but I found this interesting, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I'll retweet it, at Barry is funny, and she sent it to all three of us, but if you want to understand the wage gap in soccer, U.S. soccer pay, right? So it talks about the differences in men and women. And so exhibition games per year, they both play 20 games, men and women, right? If you win, the men get $17,625 for that game if they win. The women get $1,350. So that's,
close to $16,000.
$16,300 difference, okay? If you lose, the men get $5,000 for losing. The women don't get anything. It's zero if they lose. So the men suck. They're still making more money than the women when they win. Remember, women get $1,350 to win. The men get $5,000 to lose. For making the World Cup team, $68,750 for the men versus $15,000 for the women. And then team pay for World Cup performance, $9 million for the men, $2 million for the women. And then it shows the quality of play, which we know the difference in that between the men and women. If all that's true, that's just awful. I mean, that's just absolutely awful. And AJ had a point at the break that they negotiated this, that it's, you know, it's part of their collective bargaining. Well,
yeah, it rolls into what Nick, when he was talking about collective bargaining. Yeah, you got to make sure you got the right people negotiating your deal when the time is right.
That's bad. Between that and then the statistics that I showed with the revenue and how it's up and they're beating the men, just awful.
I agree.
Wow. And look, when they start seeing this, there would be no surprise to me that if something starts to produce revenue when in the past it didn't produce as much, mm-hmm. that the owners or the people like managing that money, they'd be tempted and they have sticky fingers and they don't want to let go of that money when they just got all that revenue. Because what is the first thing you're supposed to do with revenue in a lot of cases? Reinvest and pay your people. Mm-hmm. And I can totally see someone sitting on money and not wanting to relinquish it to the proper people.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Because that would never happen. It never happened in the past either. No. Yeah, I mean, FIFA's as crooked as it gets. When you talk about, too, and just all of international soccer, when you talk about it, when they were talking about, was it Brazil that was trying to get the last World Cup for the men? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the guy that got caught?
Trying to bribe everybody?
Yeah, was bribing everybody and their mother on FIFA just so that they could get it in Brazil. And he got his wish, and he got it in Brazil. And they found out that the people on the committee for FIFA was making like $2 million apiece. Yeah. Stop pretty, it, man.
Pretty corrupt.
Should've very, worked for very, FIFA. Very dirty.
I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but there's an NFL star that's in a bit of trouble.
Okay.
Malik McDowell, Seahawk draft pick from 2017, second rounder.
So not quite a star yet, but
Yeah, second round pick is good. I mean, you said that he may already be cut.
I think he got released by the Seahawks, but I'm not sure.
Anywho, Malik McDowell got pulled over for some bad driving. And the cop, let's just say he didn't get arrested easily, okay? In fact, there's a video that came out that was on TMZ showing the whole arrest, and it's wild. I mean, it's a wild 4-minute ride of him and a cop basically just fighting and arguing. And what's weird is that at no point did I ever hear him really ask for a supervisor. And that's a lie because he literally says that the entire time. So what we've done is we've taken the greatest hits from the 4-minute video and condensed it into 60 seconds. And this is what it sounds like when Malik McDowell gets arrested by a cop who is outweighed by probably 150 pounds at least and given up maybe a foot, foot and a half. I mean, this dude is tiny, this cop. He's tiny. So this is what it sounds like when all that happens in 60 seconds.
Have a seat in your car, sir.
216-10-5.
Have a seat in your car. Sir, have you?
I'm up at the Marathon 12 in Southfield. I'm going to send it 12.
You got your license, registration, insurance on you?
Yeah, I need your supervisor.
No, you don't. I need your license.
I need your supervisor.
Supervisor's not on right now, man.
So what you?
I'm the officer in charge.
What you pulling me up for?
For going about 60 down Southfield, and then you just spun out right there.
No, I haven't.
I just saw you, and it's on camera. Yeah, I need your license, registration, insurance.
You need to show me some proof. I need your insurance,
sir. Fix me a case, dude. Don't f*** with me.
Hey, you tell me.
Get on the ground.
I need your supervisor.
Get on the ground.
Stop getting.
You're gonna get tased, bro.
Supervisor.
You're getting tased.
I need
Taser.
I need
taser.
Taser.
I need a
supervisor.
216
taser
boy.
I said I need a supervisor.
Get out! Get out of the ground!
I need a supervisor. I need a supervisor.
Okay, first of all, I love that he asked for the cop's insurance.
Yeah, that was
at one point. He's like, I need to see your insurance.
You need to show me some proof. I need your insurance.
What? Why do you need his insurance, sir? You're the one that's getting pulled over. And then I love that the cop is treating him like a kid, counting him down like a mom or a dad who's going to put you in timeout. He's like, 3, 2, I'll do it. Don't make me. You know how parents never live up to it when they never get to 1.
One. Stop getting. You're going to get tased, bro.
That also, by the way, copyrighted. You can't be using "Don't tase me, bro." You're gonna get
tased,
bro.
Taser.
You know that cop is crapping his britches,
bro.
You know when he's thinking about like, I'm really gonna have to go through and do this.
I'm gonna have to fight this dude.
This could go really bad.
Taser.
That's Nick's favorite part. Look, Nick's just in there laughing, just die. Taser. And then, so McDowell's 6'6", 300 pounds. This cop can't be more than 5'8", 5'9", 150 maybe. That's not a big cop. Like, he's not a big dude. At one point, it looked like, I would imagine if you gave Taylor a piggyback ride, that's what it would look
like.
Like, this dude, this little ass cop is on Malik McDowell's back, and it looks like he's just getting a piggyback ride. And what's really scary is that you hear him taser McDowell, and McDowell doesn't really even flinch.
No.
He rips it out of his chest. You can see him rip the little prongs that go in you out. He's like, nope. You know that cop's like, uh-oh. And then what's really scary is at one point McDowell reaches for the cop's gun.
Yeah, that's
during the tussle. And that's going to get you in some serious trouble. It's not bad enough. Your blood alcohol level was 0.189, which is a lot. Nick does the show on 0.189, so it's manageable.
Not that much. That's I mean, he's a big dude, so I imagine he's absorbing it a little bit better,
but still.
I was wondering about the snow, but they said it happened back in February.
Yeah, this happened back
in
February.
Yeah.
But there's just so much hilarity in that.
How much
taser.
I'm not making fun of him because I would be scared.
I would be
but
scared.
But how much fear do you hear in this audio?
Taser.
That does not sound like a cop, bro. That sounds like someone who's scared.
Yeah. He's like,
that's
3,
what I said. In his mind,
2, they never get to 1.
He's already going through how bad this is going to go.
Dude, would you want to fight someone?
No,
6
whatever, 300? No,
It's when he gets, when so McDowell sits in his car and the cop walks up and starts arguing with him. And that's when he's like, oh, I need to see your insurance. And then he stands up. And this cop, his eye level is with his teats. Like, it's not even, that's not a fight you want. That's not a fight you're going to win. I'll give him credit, though. One, that's a tough-ass cop, because he hung in there the whole time during the fight, during the tussle. He hung in there, got his back at one point, but he was unable, with two arms and full body weight, he was unable to get one arm behind his back. It was he was definitely outclassed in the strength.
Yeah,
department.
I mean, it's
he when also you're, man. Go ahead, Nick.
He was just so small. Like, I'd be calling for backup. Like, no right doubt. Away.
But he also, you guys realize how much he screwed himself out of money?
Oh man!
So when Nick said no,
they tore up the store. He's got to pay for that.
Well, but now I'm talking about as a football player.
Yeah.
So he's drafted. He was projected to be a first round pick. He was drafted in the second round, as Nick said, by the Seahawks. He signed a 4-year, $6.95, so $7 million contract with 4.4 guaranteed and a signing bonus of $3.19 million. A few weeks prior to his first training camp, he got in an ATV accident. Was placed on reserve, did not report list, then tried to return to practice where they placed him on the non-football injury list due to the injuries from the accident, not football related. Then they waived him. My man cost himself millions.
And back in 2020, they have it listed as July 5th, but apparently, I don't know when this occurred, March or April. He had a stolen Ford F-150 Raptor that he was concealing or hiding. A $75,000 truck. And he was like, I don't know how I got that.
Just drove in here one day on its own.
Yeah. That's not good. A lot of trouble for him.
I guess
taser,
so.
You're getting tased. Three. Taser. Taser.
At first, I thought he said, I didn't want to supersize it. Like the cop, because he's so small.
Oh man, that's not good. That's I was just fascinated by the tussle that took place. That was crazy, man.
Yeah, you know what else is crazy? Is there are guys out there, Barry, that know that they need help in the bedroom.
Yep.
And they don't know where to go.
No, and they need to go to BlueChew.com right now and grab the first chewable that has the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. And look, if you have ED, check out BlueChew.com and get their chewables, because just like the old Viagra and Cialis, it's going to work for you, but it's going to work faster, 20 minutes versus waiting an hour like you used to. You can take it on a full or empty stomach. You used to always have to eat something first. There was a lot of planning that went into it. Not anymore, thanks to BlueChew.com. And you don't just have to have ED in order to use BlueChew.com. Let's say you just want to last longer in the bedroom or be a better lover. BlueChew.com can help you with that. And you also don't have to go to the doctor anymore physically. You can get online and get a consultation with a physician. And if they feel like this is the product for you and that you need it, you can get your prescription online as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And like Barry was saying, the whole process takes minutes instead of an hour or more in the case of when you take it and how quickly it works. It also just takes minutes for you to connect with a BlueChew.com physician. And if you qualify, you get prescribed online quickly. No more in-person doctor visits, no awkward conversations. Everybody's staring at you going, oh, there's that dude that can't get it up. He's got a problem. No, you know what? You don't have any problems anymore. And when it's delivered, guess what? It's delivered in discreet packaging, so no one knows what they're delivering to your door but you, and you get the product that you asked for. It's all done in the United States, too. All prescriptions are online by a doctor and made in the USA. Therefore, you don't have to worry about if it's really legit and it's really going to work because it came from another country. No, it's all coming from the United States directly to your door. It gives you confidence every time you're in bed. You and your partner are going to love it, so just chew it and do it. And we got a great deal for you guys. You visit BlueChew.com, get your first order for absolutely free when you use our promo code SUSPECTS. You just pay $5 for shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code SUSPECTS. And I'm telling you, chew it and do it.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, rolling through hour number two, 3 hour show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. As we always tell you, we appreciate you taking us on the go, wherever you may be. If you really have any kind of issues when you're trying to listen to the show, just download the app. You can take us anywhere, everywhere, listen to us wherever you are. We've got people listening across the country that always chime in. But all you got to do is go to ESPN975.com. First of all, if you miss any portions of today's show or you want to catch the podcast, just click on the show tab at the top of the page. You can catch up on what you missed. And while you're there, there's easy ways that they give you to guide you through downloading the app. Then you take us anywhere, everywhere, and you never miss a show.
Tonight, All-Star Game. JV, Justin Verlander, starting.
Yeah.
Surprised me a little bit because of the time we discussed that old 3 days off and all that. Be surprised if he goes more than an inning.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he goes more than an inning. Some people were saying he might go two. I don't think so. And the other thing that's surprising to me was maybe Lance Berkman was right when he said, I already know if he's going to start or not on the broadcast. Because Verlander did say that he got the call from Cora after his last start, which was, I believe, Friday night. Which would let you know that for him and AJ and planning purposes for how many days off he needs and everything like that, that the decision had been made early.
Well, good for him. Hopefully he doesn't get lit up like his last All-Star start.
You had to go there, huh?
Pretty ugly. There's a bit of controversy surrounding Verlander and Major League Baseball because he came out and basically said that the ball is juiced and that baseball knows it's juiced, and even pointed fingers at Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball. This was his exact quote. He said, it's a bleeping joke. Major League Baseball is turning this game into a joke. They own Rawlings. And you got Manfred up here saying it might be the way they center the pill. They own the bleeping company. If any other $40 billion company bought out a $400 million company and the product changed dramatically, it's not a guess as to what happened. We all know what happened. Manfred, the first time he came in, what'd he say? He said he wanted more offense. All of a sudden he comes in, the balls are juiced. It's no coincidence. We're not idiots.
He has a legit point. And here's the thing. I don't know how many people, and I was one of them, I didn't realize that MLB bought Rawlings.
I didn't know that either.
So therefore, they absolutely can control the product that is used in their game and don't have to go through the Players Association and don't have to go through all the channels, evidently. Because the fact of the matter is, that would be like the NBA saying, we're going to go to a rubber basketball on a wood floor.
Yeah.
And we know sales are going to go through the roof because everybody's clamoring for it because they can use the same ball in the playground as we use indoors. Let's do it. And not consult the players and the teams and see, you know, all those different things. And the league actually did this years ago when they experimented with the man-made material ball. And it was awful.
It was slick, right?
Like it would stick. It was almost like a Bellotta golf ball where, I remember Vince Carter once took a half-court shot to win a game. A leather basketball, if it doesn't hit, as we know, really close to the rim with spin, it's not going in. This ball hit the back heel of the rim, the flat part on the back of the rim, and stuck and just stopped like a golf ball on the green and then fell through the hoop. And everybody's like, that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
So I was shocked that MLB not only bought Rawlings, but that because of it, they could make a decision to change or alter the ball in any way, shape, or form.
Well,
they really don't have to report to people.
They didn't necessarily change or alter the ball like you would think. And I don't remember when I brought this up. I think you might have been out. But we talked about Manfred came out and said, look, the science of it is changing, and they have reduced the drag on the ball. And the way that they did that is they have the pill of the ball, the sweet spot, if you will, the center point of the ball is more accurately centered. So when that pill is a little off center, it creates wobble. Wobble creates drag. The ball doesn't fly as far. The less drag, the less wobble, the further the ball flies. So if you center that pill and make it perfect, then the ball flies further.
I would take it that's the core, the super ball in the middle.
So if that's the case, is it really altering the ball or is it making it more precise?
I don't know, but if you listen to Verlander...
Nobody wants wobbly balls, so you should just...
You were dying to say that.
Don't you normally leave those to me?
Dying to say that.
I'm just saying, who wants a wobbly balls?
Such
nobody,
a suspect move right there.
Nobody wants a... Yeah, I set up this whole segment for that. No, I'm just kidding. I just literally thought of it. But it's true, though, if you're going to perfect the ball, perfect the manufacturing of the ball, and that's the case, if that's the science behind it, which it makes sense, and maybe I'm just gullible, But how could you say that they're juicing it? They're not winding it tighter. They're not reducing the seams on the ball.
You need to talk to the Major League pitchers about that, because they said this year, as opposed to other years, where the seams were at least raised to some degree so that the pitcher could get a good grip on it. He said, Verlander said, and several other pitchers backed him up on it, the fact that this year the ball has little to no seam on it. It's really tough, because that's where guys get their spin rate up. That's how guys throw their curveball. And it's all focused around their finger placement on the seams. And when there's little to no seams, control is an issue. Obviously, they have more issues with spit, you know, the bite on a curveball, things like that. So that's something to consider.
Here's the problem. If this were anybody else that wasn't giving up at least a home run a game.
Are you talking about Verlander?
Yeah.
You might have a little more substance behind the argument, but some of this feels like sour grapes and excuses, because you can't be giving up as many home runs as Verlander has and then be like, well, the ball's juiced. Well, one, you're a fly ball pitcher. Two, there's launch angle and, you know, so many different approaches now to hitting than there used to be. And some of that can catch up with you. There's no variations in the ball or any of that stuff? Absolutely not. But I'm just suggesting that if a guy who's given up a ton of home runs this year is the one to come forward and say there's a problem, it's just a bad look.
And I wanted to say that too. I just wanted to leave it to you to be the a-hole. But you saw when Verlander didn't have that good game against the Angels, the first game of the series.
Friday night, I believe.
AJ at the post-game presser was like, look, it's no secret. He kind of throws up, and that's a kind of a tendency, and batters are just really good in the big leagues and they've been hitting it. So if you have tendencies that
Berkman during the broadcast itself was like, there's a pitch that JV's gotten away with in the past, the high fastball. Mm-hmm. He's been able to blow it by you with good velocity. He's been able to use it and sneak it by you when you weren't expecting it. But now you're watching these guys that are putting the bat on it and doing damage with it. And you're right. He's probably not the right spokesperson, but we're so analytically driven in sports today that I brought it up about a couple months ago when the story came out that Major League Baseball actually put the actual Major League balls in AAA. And the home run numbers have just gone through the roof. So you're right that probably JV's probably not the right guy to be bitching. But at the same time, you can't argue that for whatever the reason may be, whether they eliminated the drag and they've placed the pill more exactly, precisely center in the ball. But for one reason, one way or another, numbers are up across the board because of this baseball.
JD Martinez also came out on the issue, because obviously as a power hitter, he's going to have his stance on. He said it's a power arm league. It's either a walk or a strikeout, stuff over command. I think you see a lot more mistakes over the plate. The velocity, the guys trying to hit the ball in the air, I think it's a recipe for home runs. Also a valid argument, which is what I was saying earlier. When you got guys that are concerned with the launch angle and the path that their bat takes, you know, you used to never see a ton of home runs on the low ball. But the way that hitters are now, they prefer a low ball because of launch
Mike
angle.
Mike Trout is the master of the low ball hit.
Home run.
And but he hits, you're right. You don't see a low ball. Even when I pitch.
You used to not see
that's
guys.
That's the safety zone.
That was a ground ball.
Yes.
I mean, you got guys, that's what they always tell you. Stay down in the zone. And now that's a dangerous game. You almost have to stay at the edge of the zone or out of the zone to get swings and misses.
You got to get them
to chase,
and you got to dabble on the corners.
Because launch angle and bat path now is completely different than it was even a year or two ago.
But I will say this. Verlander's one quote was spot on, because even Rob Manfred couldn't disagree with it. He said, look, Manfred, when he took over, wanted more excitement, more runs.
Offense, yeah.
And he said, he basically, when he was talking about that, that's when he got into the ball. And Manfred said, look, I'm not going to deny the fact. I'm not going to get into whether it's any differences in the ball or not, but he did mention the drag as well. But he also was probably very pleased that the game is more enticing and exciting when you get, like the other night when the Astros and Angels, it was going to be who scored last won the game in that slugfest in extra innings. So, all right, we'll continue to roll on. We've got 2 hours in the books. That means 60 minutes on the clock, 1 hour to go in the big show, and plenty more opportunities for you to get involved. 713-780-3776, HIP listener line. You can call, you can text, you can even hit us on Twitter. It's The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.